Welcome to Bridge the Gap with hosts Lucas McCurdy and Joshua Crisp, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. Powered by Markentum.
We are back on Bridge the Gap podcast. Josh, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing awesome. We're having fun. We're still here at the EFA and enjoying some time and just loving it. The weather's broke a little bit and excited to be here with you for another episode of Bridge the Gap.
We're excited. We've been talking to a lot of different people, and one of the guys that I've been wanting to connect with is Dean here from Studio 65. So, Dean, we're really glad that you're here on the show with us today.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So, Dean, tell us a little bit about your background and what got you interested in design, and then what made you start to leverage your talents into aging and senior communities?
Okay, well, I don't know when I didn't want to be an architect.
Okay.
So it's never was a question. I went to Notre Dame to get my undergraduate degree. After that, I went to the University of Michigan for my master's, intending to practice architecture, but moved to New York City, and every project that I got was an interiors project.
Okay.
So I just became more self-taught in interior architecture, interior design, and learning that story. And so I pretty much worked in every type of field, healthcare, multifamily, and the like. But in 96, I moved to Austin, Texas, and met Leah Von Kainel, who had started the Senior Living Group at a large architectural firm there. And she hired me to grow it. And I said, well, I don't know anything about senior living. I don't even know what it is. And she says, it's everything that you've ever done in one building.
Okay.
So, so it was really exciting. And my first project was actually in Japan. It was their first senior living community that they did, and we did two of them there, and just did a deep dive into ergonomics for seniors and the like, but then we had to twist it because the Japanese senior is smaller, so everything had to be custom designed and the like. And then those were really successful, and when we came back, we kind of showed everybody in the industry what we were doing, and they were going, well, that's too modern, that's too progressive, that's not what we want. And I couldn't understand it because everything that I was seeing in the States was very old-fashioned. But we still did projects there and just began to fall in love with the seniors, kind of giving back to them and really understanding all the wealth of knowledge that the seniors have. And you just want to be able to have them and create environments for them that they can age with dignity. And so And then I became a caregiver for my mother, and then that really brought a whole other passion level to it. And she taught me a lot about what seniors like and ergonomics again and lighting, and shared that whole information. And then that's really, really turned personal. And ever since then, it's been a personal journey for that. And so we found that in our office, everybody comes to our practice usually with a story of their love for their grandfather, grandmother, whatever it is. And so overall, it's a very culture of passion of what
sure.
we do.
Sure. And I've had the fortunate opportunity to visit your office, and you could feel that culture when you walked in. And before I got there, so I went on your website, and you guys have a video on there where you kind of talk a little bit about your philosophy around working with seniors. And Dean, I mean, you even got emotional on the video, which I thought, okay, like this is really real to them. So it's authentic, and we really appreciate that. So one of the topics that continues to come up over and over is multi-generational living. It's a topic that has been talked about here. A number of our guests have been talked about it. What's y'all's exposure to that topic, and what are your thoughts and philosophies on it?
Well, so our best practice right now in the office, as we've done more and more senior living projects, is that we're really not designing communities for seniors. We're actually designing communities for the community. And so if you go through a community throughout the day, you'll see that there are people there that are 90, and you'll see there are people there that are 4 years old visiting their grandparents. Mm-hmm. You have the caregivers who are multiple different ages, just all different sorts. And so you want to create a wonderful environment for all of them, so they want to come to this place.
Sure.
And it becomes a really energized space. And the residents feel that live there feel that they have, they're in this space that makes them feel good, and there's a good buzz about it.
Yes.
And so that's why you have to, you know, everyone has this preconceived notion of what senior living design is. And so, you know, they think traditional and all this kind of stuff. But reality is, you know, people like something modern and they like something traditional. And it's like when I was helping my mother find the place, and I brought this up in the video, she would go in and she would like going, what is with this traditional stuff? I never wanted this stuff, and this is the only thing that I have. So this is when we learned to create environments specific to the area, specific to the brand, and have it be whether it's modern, traditional, but have all the elements in it. And the other thing that's really cool now in communities is that they're outreaching to the surrounding community.
Yeah.
So they want to bring that outside community in,
bring it in
and have that discussion. No longer out in suburbia behind a fence with a security gate and, you know, limiting the people that can come in and go.
Exactly. Well, there's several things that I find very fascinating about your story. First of all, I think what I heard you say was your first major senior living project was international.
Yes.
So first of all, you went international in your first project. Second, that it's a personal experience for you that kind of is driving the passion. But tell me a little bit. I love how you're designing the communities for the community, as you said it. So how do you do that in your discovery phase? I mean, how are you learning what that community needs to consist of?
Well, it all depends on the location, whether it's in more urban environment or kind of that new suburban urban environment. But what we try and do is place the commons areas like the bistro, the bar, or the salon on the perimeter near the front.
Okay.
And that way the community can share those uses, but the residents still have issues with security.
Sure.
So it allows kind of an interstitial zone where the residents can come, public can come, and then they can share experiences.
Sure.
And so that's what we're trying to do. And even in the suburban markets, we try and do that and not to bury the functions.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got that public zone, you kind of that transition zone, and then the private zone.
Sure.
They still want their privacy and their security.
I love that. So your team, it sounds like y'all have a very collaborative approach. You said they all have stories. So are they infusing kind of their life stories and like the things that they would like to see into these communities as well? Or is it more about you go out and you learn the community with which this community is going to live in?
It's all about collaborating, exchange of information. So right now we have projects in 32 states.
Okay.
So that means the staff is out there. And when they come back, every Friday we have office meetings. Share experiences, share the successes, share the not so successes, learn from our mistakes, but also learn from our successes as well. So, and then it's kind of my job as the founder and owner to really kind of look down the road and what's happening 5, 7, 10 years down the road and get them starting to think and let them kind of be able to create themselves what that might look like.
Yeah. So Bridge the Gap, we really have three pillars that we want to accomplish. We want to inform, we want to educate, we want to influence our space. You mentioned, and I may put you on the spot here, but obviously you've had a lot of success. Maybe share some of the challenges that you've had and some of those failures that others could learn from as you're starting, you know, designing communities.
You know, it might be a cliche, but most of the time your failures are due to lack of communication.
Okay. You know, I wouldn't believe that.
Yeah. You think maybe you told somebody something, but you didn't, or you assumed that they knew something and they didn't. And that's always the situation. So the way you make a success out of that is how you respond to it.
Sure.
So one of our favorite sayings is finish strong. So, because the last thing that we do is the first thing that our clients and our communities remember.
That's right.
On that. So sometimes it's taking a risk of whether it's a color or a pattern or the like, and you learn from that. But sometimes you think it's a mistake, and then you go back 6 months later, and that what you thought was a mistake was actually the biggest success that's on there. And that's when you really learn to take those risks and mitigate those risks. So if you have to change them or alter them around, you can do that.
Sure.
But that's the only way that you then go to the next step.
That's good stuff. So I've asked a couple of folks that we've been talking to over the past several episodes that we're talking about multi-generational. And I ask, you know, what's some of the biggest threats, or what are some of the biggest obstacles we have to overcome in our industry as we're moving forward? What would you say, as you're seeing some of the biggest challenges that the industry faces right now in senior housing and programming design, what are some of the biggest obstacles that your team's trying to overcome with new design?
It's preconceived notions.
Okay.
Everyone just has assumptions of what it should be,
yeah,
or what a formula is. A lot,
sure,
of these projects, especially multi brand projects, are formulas,
mm-hmm,
and you lose that personality. There was one large company that was no longer in business that they had five design schemes, and they used those five design schemes, mm-hmm, throughout the country,
sure,
realizing that it didn't work across the country.
Yeah,
and so they learned from that mistake. But we look to the hospitality and the multifamily and healthcare markets for our inspiration, because if everyone's just talking to each other here at the conference, you're just going to get the same.
Sure.
So we go outside and kind of see what are those influences. You know, we go to the National Restaurant Association show, mm-hmm, what's the latest in food service, hospitality side, hospitality design expo,
mm-hmm,
what are the latest trends in that, because I was saying, we don't have a lot of money to do research, but the hospitality industry does and multifamily does, so I'm more than happy to utilize all their research and their findings, because people staying in the hotels are seniors, baby boomers, millennials, and they all want to encourage socialization.
Yep.
So what do we want in our communities? We want to serve multi-generational, including millennials, seniors, baby boomers, and we want to socialize. So
exactly.
To me, it's a no-brainer.
Exactly. So talk to me a little bit about, maybe there's a operator that's listening or an investor that's listening that has maybe just starting to get their feet wet into the senior space, and they either want to build ground up, or maybe more they're getting in through acquisitions. But the space is just a little bit different, so they maybe not understand all of the design influence on retro repositioning a building that maybe used to be a hotel, or maybe it used to be a multifamily community, or just a legacy property that's very, very dated. Maybe walk us through that process from their perspective on putting the right team together to help drive good communication from the design up front to the contractor that's actually executing on that and all those parties.
Yeah, so the most successful ventures that I've journeyed on through renovations, or what you're talking about, is that you have to have people that are experienced on the design side in senior living. You need contractors that are knowledgeable in senior living, and all the consultants generally in senior living. I prefer food service consultants that are not in senior living.
And why is that?
Because I go to any restaurant, they'll service a lot of food, and their kitchens are generally half the size that you see in a senior living community. And we're trying to create a restaurant experience. So I don't want a mass market typical senior living. I want something that's more fresh and evolving. So
sure,
that's my view on it. But once you get those experienced people, they've been through it, they know how to phase it, they know how residents react. Because anytime you're going through this renovation, if there are residents there, it's a key issue that,
sure,
you have to work through. But you have to look at the whole project as a whole. So many times when they do renovations, it's, well, let's fix the dining room, or let's fix the lobby. You really need to design it as a whole and then phase it over multiple years.
Mm-hmm.
So when the project is done, it's one cohesive package. It isn't a series of add-on renovations, and this year blue was the color, and next year, you know, green is the color, and so you've got all those colors in there rather than just one cohesive package.
Sure.
So for that, to me, that speaks to budgets, which seems to be kind of like the B word that causes a lot of things to shift in a wrong direction, because they're so focused on budget and ROI, which are obviously very important. But it sounds like what you're saying, Dean, is that, okay, if you're going to phase this over a number of quarters or years, because maybe the budget's not all there, don't really put a lot of thought into the design up front to then space that out long term, so that you don't end up with a patchwork quilt.
Correct. And the other thing too is, if it is a budget concern rather than you just have to do it in phases in order to execute, we always will negotiate with our vendors for a 2 to 3 year period to hold prices or mitigate the escalation to keep the budget, rather than just assuming you're just going to...
It's going to be the same later. Same,
you just can't do that. So we always are looking forward to the end, once again, to the end of the project through budget, design, and how to phase.
Absolutely. So there's a lot of talk now just about the silver tsunami that's coming. But I've also heard that we're overbuilding. Like, there's these two conversations that seem to be contradictive to one another, but I understand a little bit of the minutiae of that. So, Dean, I know that you've probably been hearing these things too. What's your thought process about maybe the next decade of the demographics, 11,000 over 65 a day, turning 65 a day, and what that means to the industry as far as housing?
Yeah, so... we hear the same thing, that's overbuilt. We've actually seen it kind of slow down this first quarter, without a doubt. It's a big discussion, because are baby boomers going to want to move into these communities? Mm-hmm. Or is it going to be more need-based, and they're not going to move in until they have to? So our biggest growth market probably the past 2 years has been active adult. So you have multifamily providers coming in and creating these communities that don't have a commercial kitchen, but they're planned to have one in the future if they want.
Okay.
They're reaching out to those baby boomers to say, hey, give this a chance. You're not committing anything. It's a rental. We'll take care of everything. You can go travel away for 2 to 3 months, come back, you have your home here. Mm-hmm. And then they're even looking as a multi-brand that if you travel somewhere, you can stay at their guest suite in the other city that you're going to.
I love that.
So it's kind of like a, you know, different branding type of thing. And so, once again, that's like looking to the hospitality industry to be able to do something like that. And
sure.
So they're, but that's how I feel it's going to be. I think you're going to see more of this new concept, and I think you're going to see outreach to people staying at home and trying to get them to come in and maybe use some of the amenity spaces. So they kind of tap, you know, put their toe into the water, kind of see what it's like.
Sure.
And then when they see this is actually pretty cool, then they might take the plunge and move on in. And it's very similar to, once again, the hospitality market, where they're saying, yeah, you can come on in and use our restaurant and use our fitness and, and have memberships for that type of thing. So that's a way that you can look at those other industries and how to make it a success on the senior living side.
I love it. Well, you're saying a lot of the things that I also share the belief in, and what it boils down to is we've been very cookie cutter, you know, for the last however many years, and it's changing radically. There's going to be various models, creative models. So I'm excited. I'm excited about the opportunity. I know, just like you said, it sounds very negative when you hear people say we're overbuilding and overbuilding, but I think a lot of times it may not be that we're overbuilding. It's just that the product that we're building may not be the product that's relevant tomorrow. So we may be overbuilding that product.
Exactly.
So I love it. And it's been great talking with you. And by the way, you've got some our listeners can't see this, but some snazzy shoes, right? I wanted to make sure that we got that out there.
I was going to say, I have one last biting question. Where did you get those shoes?
I am a Cole Haan fanatic.
Love them.
Any bright colored or metallic shoe out there, they're the most comfortable shoes. And hey, us guys have to have something to make us individual.
That's right.
So,
man,
my thing is my shoes and my socks.
So a Cole Haan, it's a wingtip gold metallic, and it looks like it's also comfortable.
Very,
man. So we just got a plug for Cole Haan. I hope they appreciate that.
I hope I get some shoes in the mail.
We might. Yeah. We might. That's pretty awesome.
We'll put Dean's address in the show notes for Cole Haan.
That's right. Maybe he'll autograph up here.
So. I have to tell the story. I was in New York staying at a hotel and came back after dinner. It was late at night. The bar was about ready to close down. Started talking to this couple, and he was the head designer for Cole Haan.
Get out.
That's awesome.
Did you have on the Cole Haan shoes?
I had on Cole Haan shoes.
Oh, you did.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Man, that's great.
Well, another great show here. Dean, we are super appreciative of giving us your time, your talent, your expertise. You know, our mission is to inform, educate, and influence, and I really think that this is a lot of value back to our listeners to really contribute and to collaborate back into the community that we love, into senior living and senior housing. So, Josh, thank you once again, my friend, for another great show. Dean, thank you for your time. Wish you the best. We will connect to Dean in the show notes and his organization, Studio 65, out of Austin, Texas. And just as we say on every show, that we don't want the conversation to end when the audio is over. So please feel free to engage with us back on our social channels on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. And if you have questions for Dean or for Bridge the Gap, just write them down and we promise that we'll get back to you. So another great Bridge the Gap. We appreciate you listening. Goodbye.